Welcome to Community Conversations with State Attorney Bain, your talk show for insights on the criminal justice system, community issues, and public safety in Orange and Osceola counties. Join State Attorney Andrew Bain as he dives into the issues that matter most to you, keeping it real every step of the way.
All right, good afternoon, everyone. This is Andrew Bain, and I'm your State Attorney for the Ninth Judicial Circuit. I want to welcome all our listeners and our viewers to Community Connections with State Attorney Bain, and Community Conversations with State Attorney Bain. And we're going to dive into some really important topics today as it relates to the health of our community, the resilience of our community, and how do we become better as a community, as a whole, not just individually and in each family, but as a complete community. How do we become healthier, better, in the best mindset that we can have? But as most of the shows, if anybody's been following, we always start off with kind of what's going on with the office, what's happening here at the state attorney's office, and what do we do on a everyday basis. So right now, actively this week, we have several actual homicide cases going on here at the courthouse. And other violent crimes unit is also in trial right now on a very serious attempted murder case. And so we're actively working on a day-to-day basis continually to protect our public from ongoing harm. So as many of you know, the mission of the office is to build safer communities. We want to make sure that that's the main focus of what we do and that we're providing a great product in doing so, as well as we also want to be on the side of prevention. We want to be on the side of preventing prosecutions. And so if we can, prevent a lot of the things that happen, we will be in a so much healthier situation. And we have been working on that in multiple programs that you hear about throughout the time that we have time to spend together over the next several weeks. And you also have heard about some of that from our community partners that we're going to have on the show. So, but again, first let's start talking about, a lot of people ask me about, what does a state attorney do? Like, what is your job, sir? So my job in the law is described as, I'm the person that represents the state of Florida as far in prosecutions of cases. And so as the chief prosecutor, as the head guy, I have several jobs that go along with doing that. Our office next week for the first time will be staffed, fully staffed. We'll have almost 180 attorneys or prospective attorneys working for the office for the first time in several years, almost over a decade. And so we are pumped up for that potential, pumped up for the ability that it's going to give us to handle the caseload that comes at us every single year. So our office takes in somewhere between 50,000 and 60,000 cases a year. And so that's a crazy number. And we always have staff that needs to be able to come in and make sure that they're able to handle the caseloads, be able to handle the fast-paced work, be able to be sympathetic and empathetic when it comes to our victims, be able to support the prosecution in a way that's going to, again, build a safer community, then make sure that we're not going to have the high recidivism rates that we've traditionally had in the past. And so there are a lot of things that go into doing that. But my main job is to manage those about 180 attorneys that we're going to have starting next week, and also have the capacity to deal with all the other staff that we have. So we have about 400 in total people that work here in the office. That's both in Orange and in Osceola County. And so we have a tremendous amount of work that goes into doing that. And that's managing the people that work for this office. That's part of the deal. Like, I'm the managing partner, if you can think about it, for the president or CEO of a relatively decent large company. And so that's about budgeting, that's about finances, that's about dealing with what the taxpayers give us. So our taxpayer budget is around a little bit less than $40 million. And so how do we deal with using that money? Some of that, a lot of that money goes towards salaries, obviously, for a lot of people that work here. But a lot of it goes through just like from technology to IT to updates and to our investigators that work for us, or their equipment, to make sure that we are on the cutting edge of the work of doing prosecutions for this office. So super excited about that possibility. Super excited about what we do in that respect. But it's also a lot of things that I do on the outside of that. That's all things that go on inside office. So I spend a lot of my time meeting with the community, meeting with community leaders, meeting with community organizations, meeting with our elected officials that are in Orange and Osceola County. That's local, from cities to county commission, like commissioners, to state reps and senators, and sometimes even our federal partners, commissioners, congressmen and senators. And so it's a lot about, you know, building those relationships so we can have the best resources available to our office. So that is another thing that comes with doing that. But along with also doing that is I have to continuously keep in contact with our law enforcement partners. So we have over 20 law enforcement agencies, both municipalities and there's two sheriff's offices that we have in the circuit. But in addition to that, we have our federal partners. So that's talking about the FBI, Department of Homeland Security, ICE, that's talking about the US Marshals, that's talking about all these other federal partners that we have in making sure that we're providing, again, building a safer community as the best product for what we're doing in our community. So that means a lot, what goes on here. So again, so how that happens, how does that work? So one of my best things I really pride myself on, and I pride myself on the work that we do, especially with the Metropolitan Bureau of Investigation. If you check out our first episode, we talked about human trafficking, and you heard from one of our investigators at the Metropolitan Bureau of Investigation. And we are making sure that we're working to continue to make sure that we're having that great relationship to combat human trafficking. And a lot of that has to do with recovery of victims and you know, identifying victims and finding victims that don't know that they're victims of human trafficking. So when we're missing kids, we're missing our human trafficking victims that may be juveniles or other sexual victims, like sexual abuse and sexual criminality that happens around our kids. One of my big things that I work on really hard is building plans for those kids, going out and making sure that we're able to find them. So that's using the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, their analysts. That's using U.S. Marshal Service. If that's using our FBI partners, if that's using any of those people to make sure that we're going to protect our kids, that's what my job is to do. My job is to facilitate that relationship, to make sure that we are using every tool that is at our disposal to make sure that we are, you know, attacking, addressing an issue that is going to causing the most harm to the people in our community, and especially when it comes to the most vulnerable people in our community. And so that also goes to on the other end of that situation. So we always talk about, kids, we also talk about seniors. So it's talking about, how do we, work with our community to, stop what happens to seniors when it comes to exploitation and when it comes to scams and all things like that. So that's also working with, just outside partners as well. So, we work with financial institutions like Chase Bank or Fifth Third Bank. We also work with other community organizations like CLSMF, which is Community Legal Services of Mid-Florida, to make sure that we're also helping to provide education and protection for our seniors. And so we're actually getting ready to actually roll out a program, hopefully here in October, that we're gonna address a lot of the seniors here locally with that initiative, to make sure that they are correctly equipped to, one, guard against that the hard-earned money that they have left to want to have when they get older. And to make sure that also they're not gonna be taken advantage of by people that would otherwise, that they come in and think that they're a friend, that they're there to help them. They may use their loneliness against them. So that is a big part of what I do on an everyday basis. So it's about dealing with what's going on inside the office, managing all the people that are here in the office. It's also about managing all the relationships outside of the office, both with businesses, with the government, with law enforcement. It's about managing all those relationships, again, to achieve the correct goal, which is building a safer community for our people that live here in the circuit. And you'll hear me say this a lot. I say this a lot all the time when I'm out speaking to the community. Education is prevention. And prevention is education. And what we call, and one of my favorite things to have in my office, and what I would love to see when it comes from the community, are preventable prosecutions. So the best type of a case that I can have is a preventable prosecution, a case that never happened because we were on the prevention end of it, because we didn't allow one of our kids to slip through the cracks. We didn't allow for our community to fall in disrepair and disarray. We jumped in head first, attacking issues, and that's really what I love to do. And that's what I love about the person that I'm gonna have on as a guest today. Her name is Rachel Allen. She'll tell you all about herself in a minute, but she's a professor at Valencia College, and she's also the head and creator of a organization called the Peace and Justice Institute. And so this Saturday, we're actually gonna talk about exactly that. How do we prevent a lot of these things that happen in our community? So Saturday, we're having a workshop at New Covenant Baptist Church. It's gonna be from 9 to 12 p.m. You can sign up for that workshop on our link, or you can sign up for our newsletter that went out, and you can access to sign up for that workshop from 9 to 12 at New Covenant Baptist Church on Rio Grande on Saturday, August 3rd. And we're going to talk about in that workshop one of my favorite topics to talk to parents about, to talk to our pastors and faith leaders about, and it's talking about with something called PACEs. So those are positive and adverse childhood experiences. So back some years ago, back in California, there was a study done. And there was a study that outlined all these different things that for people with surveys about how they grew up and all the different, all these different questions. And it kind of came to find out that there were certain things that we can identify as episodes in especially early childhood development that can project what's going to happen with that child if not those issues are not addressed. And that's from mental health, that's your actual health, that's about education, that's about jobs, that's about career paths, it's about all those different things that we see going on in our families that we kind of sometimes just ignore. We kind of sweep it under the rug, like, well, it's just going to be okay. Well, it's just going to go away. Well, they'll just grow out of it. We hear all those kind of things all the time when we're and we're talking to people. And we're talking to people sometimes, a lot of people that end up in the criminal justice system. We talk to them, they talk a lot about, my parents. I grew up in a single mom. My mom worked all the time she really didn't have time for us. I experienced domestic violence in my home. I experienced abuse as a child. All these different things that are commonality things that go along with what happens to a child. And what happens to a lot of people that end up in our criminal justice system. I grew up in poverty. I grew up with not having access to food or education. All those kind of things go play a part into what that means. And kind of what do we do about it? So that's really what I want to spend the next, part of our show talking about that with Rachel Allen. I'm going to bring her on here, and we're going to really get into, so what do we do about that? So good afternoon, Ms. Allen. How are you?
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me here today. I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
I'm doing amazing, man. It's hump day. It's a good Wednesday. It's been a very active week. Like I was telling the people about what's going on in the office. So on top of all those things, we also have grand jury's meeting this week. We're doing a lot. Like, a lot of things always happen here at the office that we're trying to keep management on. And I have to always give a big shout out to my team. I have the most amazing team that in the world that works in this office, from staff to the prosecutors. They are my investigators. They are by far world class, the best team. They always come in and give our community 100%. So I am I'm grateful to have them a part of what we do on a day-to-day basis inside the office.
Fantastic. And I just, you know, I'm thinking, and our topic today is kind of community well-being and thriving families is the name of your workshop. And I'm just thinking about you and everything you just said. And it makes me think about so many of us are living with these high levels of the stressors. You know, you just talked about a lot of stress, managing a big office, having a big job. And, you know, so many people are living with that. So I immediately think about, you know, how do we take care of ourselves?
Yeah.
You know, like the deep breathing and the getting into nature and doing some exercise. But also, I love that you brought up your team, because really professionally we have a team. Like, you're successful because of the team backing you up, and it can be that way for us in our family life too, because you know, we single moms, you know, we can all build support around ourselves, right? That tribe, that team, that that community of support is one of the major things that leads to us thriving and our children. I'm raising teenagers, so this conversation is so appropriate for me, right? I have a 15-year-old son and a 16-year-old daughter, and I think all of us parents are facing the challenges of raising children in a complex and fast-moving world that can be really stressful. So it's a great topic, and thanks for having me here today.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. So I made a mistake. So the series that we're kicking off is called Thriving Families. So it's an idea that kind of came about I'm doing a summer exploration program with a small group of kids that are involved in or justice involved, so in the criminal justice system. And what I quickly found out in kicking off the program, it was supposed to be a much bigger program, but then it kind of ended up being a smaller program. A lot because, like, it had to do with families. It had to do with how parents had structured their relationship with that child, how they, you know, didn't know how to get them to go to the program. And so, you know, it's an idea that, hey, like, this is a situation where, like, it was almost, you can't be your child's friend right now. This is, you know, your child is already in trouble. So let's help them, like, help me help them get them to the next level and show them that there's more to what goes on in life than what happens in the, you know, couple blocks where they live. And so that's, you know, a big step. And so, and also, I was like, basically all your friends in trouble anyway. So how about we all get you guys to come and try to grow together to be, you know, better, because a lot of what we talk to the kids about is the relationship they have with their friends. And that's one of the things that happens too, not just with their parents, but they have a friend group that a lot of times becomes more important to their parents, especially, like, you know, talking about your kids' ages, you know, 15, 16 years old. And so who those people are and what they stand for kind of determines what happens in their life and what happens to them later on, because, you know, you're gonna get sucked, like a lot of trouble you're gonna get involved in is you got sucked in with your friends doing something y'all shouldn't have been doing. So here we go. So that is really kind of how this all came about, and trying to find out, hey, how can we build better families? Not just deal with the kids that are the criminal justice involved, but how do we then take that and spread it to the family and try to uplift them, build them up, get them involved. And so we had some great partners coming in on Saturday to be involved. And so I'll get to that a little bit later, but let's talk about who you are and talk about the Peace and Justice Institute and how we all traveled to Miami for Christmas.
Well, this is so great. I just want to say, well, I'm Rachel Allen, and I'm the executive director of the Peace and Justice Institute. And like you, we have an institute of this nature in Central Florida that's working to build the culture of peace and justice through a resilient culture, a kind and compassionate culture. But we have this institute because I also have a community of practitioners surrounding me, with me, walking forward together to do this work. And they come from all walks of life, all areas of the community. We are like the roots under a tree spreading out throughout this region and certainly the Ninth Circuit. So, and we're doing this work together. And I wanted to just tell you, and while I was a professor at Valencia College for 26 years, and now I'm the executive director of PJI, which is independent from the college, I come to this because of my own experience. Like, I come to this work, really even of building peace and looking at adversity in childhood because of my lived experience. So this year I have 29 years in a 12-step program. I'm sober. But what that tells you is, while it's a fantastic thing that I'm 29 years sober, it gives you a little window into maybe how challenged my life was 29 years ago when I stepped into AA and stopped drinking and stopped using any drugs. And I tell this story because I don't think I'm alone. I mean, I know I'm not alone in having family challenges. So I come from a family that has mental illness, you know, bipolar disease, depression, clinical depression. There's been abuse of all kinds. There's drug addiction, alcoholism. You know, I want people to know that with whatever they're struggling with, their family, none of us is alone. There are so many of us. And I think what we've learned in this work about building a resilient Central Florida is that the secrets we keep because of the shame, like being an alcoholic or having troubles with money or gambling or food addiction, whatever it is, we're not alone. Nobody is alone. And the brilliance of building this resilient community is ending all the secrets, like trying to pretend, you know what I mean, that we have it all together, and learning how to just ask for help and talk about it. So we are trying to create a culture where we can talk about it. And parents that have children who are struggling are not alone, right? And so we need to share and talk to one another about it.
Yeah. Now, I was like, I mean, I'm like the half age of yours. My kids are like the half age of yours. And, you know, one of the biggest things always is that even there's no handbook. There's a bunch of books you can read, I guess, you know, from parenting. And then there's some philosophies you gotta attach them to. But it doesn't all work for each family. You know, like there's all those different things that go on. So how do we do this? Like, you know, like you got these independent humans that now live with you and you love them. You provide for them, and then, you know, you're trying to navigate that relationship. So it's always something that's, you know, like I said, again, it's not alone and not alone. And then so, you know, I've had a couple of friends also commit suicide for that. They're saying that, and I always thought in my mind, I was like, man, what happened that they felt that they were that alone? That like, and I feel bad as a friend sometimes. I'm like, man, like you, like, what made you feel like you couldn't pick up the phone and call me and tell me, hey, you know, I'm hurting, or I'm depressed, or I have all these things. I have these things going on. I have this darkness that's taking over my life. What made it happen when you feel like you couldn't do that? So that's also just one of those very, kind of things that I always think about mine. It's like, when I talk to people, like, you don't have to hide it. You know, I mean, it's fine. Yeah. Well, I'm not perfect. Like, I promise you, like, you know, State Attorney Bain is not a perfect human. I am just as broken as the next person. And I am here because I want to help, and not because, you know, I'm here to condemn you about anything. So it's always kind of, as I said, that interesting pull and take about what goes on.
Well, and I think it is to be with our children, mm-hmm. with our friends, with our parents, if we still have our parents, you know, to be as authentic as we can be and not pretend and not keep these secrets. So it's to model for everyone in our lives. Like, you know, sometimes I'll talk to my team. I was on the phone with some today on my team, and I said, I'm having anxiety today. I said, maybe it's because I'm going on the radio at 2 o'clock with State Attorney Bain. I don't know what it is, but I'm having it. But then I'm being authentic because I want my staff to be able to say, Rachel, I'm not doing well today. Because sometimes just sharing the information relieves some of it, but it helps us. You know, one of the things we talk about at PJI is waking up to our shared humanity. We're all just humans. We're all just, you know, bopping along, struggling some days, really flying on air other days because things are going well. But learning how to just take the ups and the downs and know that it's all going to be okay, but to do it with support. So one of the things that we can do, one of the things that I constantly do is try to educate myself. So in the workshop on Saturday, which is intended for parents and families, and it's intended for the attorneys that work for you, because they're responsible for prosecuting, for learning who is this person in front of me, how did they get in this situation, and what do we need to do to solve for it, to create a safe community. Correct. And some of those people, they're going to jail, because that's how we're going to solve for it. Others, your attorneys are going to say, this person does not belong in jail. They need something different to create a safe community. Because remember, just growing our jail isn't going to create community safety. You know what I mean? And it's expensive. So that's what we learned in Miami, right? There are ways, and we went down there together with a whole delegation of leaders from Central Florida to find out, how did they close one of their three jails? How are they solving for the people who are living homeless, oftentimes with mental illness? And keeping them out of the prisons, which we now know after the work we've done this year, that those are really, they've come the place where we house people with serious mental illness. They end up now in our prisons. So we're trying to solve for that. You're working on it. The public defender's office is cooperating. The county, the homeless shelter, the domestic violence shelter, right? All of us, right? But educating ourselves, because as my children have gone through different developmental stages, part of me, you know, if I don't understand where they are as a 9-year-old, right, or as a 4-year-old, I might discipline them in such a way that's inappropriate. But if I educate myself to understand child development, and really sometimes that means just Googling, I've got an 8-year-old boy who's driving me crazy, and it might come up where they are developmentally as 8-year-olds, and I go, oh, this is normal. This is normal 8-year-old boy behavior. I don't feel so bad as a parent. I can be more positive with my son or my daughter. You know what I mean? And then we're all doing better. That's happened to me numerous times over the years. I'm afraid about a behavior I witness. I do a little research and I find out normal. My child is this is normal development. And I just need to keep maturing as a parent, keep educating, and keep loving my child through every season that they go through.
Yeah, that happened to me too as a kid, because I'm a big man. I was a big kid too, so it didn't happen overnight. And then I was always bigger than my age. And I think that kind of disturbed like my teachers and people that the community and things like yes, I'm 7 or 8. I know I look like I'm 15, but I'm really a 7 or 8. So, and that's just a normal childhood behavior. So, I mean, I kind of do that with my kids too, because they're taller than normal because I'm their dad. But I have an 8-year-old and I have a 6-year-old that's going to be 7. And so often I'm like, look, one's 8 and I expect her to be 8 years old. I don't care how tall she is. I don't care if she's as tall as her mom. And, and I have a 6 and a 7-year-old, but then there's going to be 6 or 7. And that's what I expect her to be. And that's kind of one of the things I took on. I always keep reminding myself, and I didn't even have to remind my wife. I'm like, it is still this age. And so we've got to keep working and making sure. And that's one of those things as well that we talk about. So I want to talk about something that kind of is kind of a crazy thing. So I started talking earlier about an ACEs score, And so I want to talk a little bit about that. And I want to talk about some of those numbers that come out of that score, like especially like ones like think about you have a 4 or higher ACES score and what that means. So can you talk to people a little bit about what that means and kind of what we're looking at?
What we're going to learn on Saturday is about this study. It was an adverse childhood experiences study. It happened in the late 80s out in California, and they surveyed 17,000 mostly educated middle-class white people to find out what kind of adversities were in their life. And they asked them things about, abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, neglect, economics in the family. Was there like sort of economic collapse, poverty, a parent incarcerated? Was there spousal abuse, abuse, violence toward the mother? So there were 10 questions. And what they came to find out is that 1 in 4 people experience an ACE. So about 64% of people have had one ACE. Divorce is one of them. But the 17% of our population has experienced 4 or more of these adversities. And this is in childhood before they turn 18 years old. But what we found out in this study is there is a direct correlation between the number of ACEs and the major diseases that people suffer from. So 5 in 10 of the major diseases that humans have are indicated by ACEs. So whereas there's not a direct causation, they say we don't know for sure that if you have high ACEs that you're going to have heart disease or diabetes or some kind of addictive behavior, but there is a correlation. So what we know is what's predictable is preventable. So you talked a lot about the importance of education and prevention. So what we do with this work is find out, understand the impact of childhood adversity. And of course, we all listen to this and we'll think about ourselves, you know, what's my score? You know, 1 out of 10, what's my score? But then as parents, we begin to think, well, what's the score of my children so far, right? I mean, my child's 16, this goes up until really their 18th birthday. And then we might get afraid. Well, does this mean they're going to be this, this, this? What it means is there is a likelihood that these things can happen. Mm-hmm. And you're going to learn about why on Saturday. But what we also learn is what's predictable is preventable. So if we know about this, we now have the capacity, we can learn, we can partner, we can get support to prevent the negative outcomes. And so that's the resiliency part of the education that's going to happen on Saturday. We understand the science of resilience. So as to know that what we say is, you know, biology isn't destiny. Just because these things have happened to ourselves or our children doesn't mean these negative health outcomes, mental health or behavior outcomes will happen. Yeah. What it does mean is we can learn as their parents or as the healthy adult in the life of a child, because it isn't always the parent mm-hmm. that helps a child, right? Yeah. Sometimes it's just that healthy adult, and they call them well-regulated adults, you know, like, and well-regulated means like when things get really hairy and crazy, I can stay calm. I can stay thinking and make good decisions. So we need what we're working on, right, together and in community with all of our fellow practitioners and leaders is building as many healthy, well-regulated adults around us. And so they can surround our children. And so even children who go through high levels of adversity, we call it toxic stress. And you'll learn about that on Saturday. They can still come out the other side with great outcomes, great life outcomes. So this is the good news. And this is what we're trying to educate for in our community and work together to create a resilient Central Florida.
Yeah. And that's really the most important thing. So, I mean, I think about all of the kids, especially that we work with, both on the ones that are justice involved and our victims, especially more in particularly, I think about some of the most recent cases that we've dealt with. And I just think about like you know, all this, all these traumas, you know what I mean, all these things that go on in a lot of these kids' lives, and then, you know, we kind of normalize them. They've all become kind of normalized in their own communities, and a lot of times in their own families, and that's like the kind of thing that, like, how do we get to that? How do we, like, kind of disrupt that? Because I mean, I think in my mind, like, where I grew up, you know, things were kind of, some things like now that I'm like that would never happen in my neighborhood where I live now, like, were like a normal thing, like a normal thing, like, you know, somebody hollering, fighting in the middle of the night, or you know, there was somebody shooting, like, you know, while I was staying, especially I was staying with my brother-in-law, like, where he lived, my godbrother, where he lived and stuff like that. Like, somebody went shooting a gun, or there's alcoholics in the street, or drug addicts, and, you know, people selling drugs and those kind of things like that. So, like, I'm like, you know, but that was just my world. I didn't really realize there was a different kind of world until I got to the University of Miami. So we were down, I went from, you know, where I was in Broward County, and I went down to Miami at Coral Gables. I was like, people live a different lifestyle. You know, trust fund kids and, you know, old trust fund kids, not just, you know, where they're, you know, 6-year-old trust fund kids. People ain't never worked in their lives, and that kind of stuff. So it was a totally different, you know, switch the mindset of kind of like, what's the potential, what's the possibility of what we deal with on a day-to-day basis. So it's always, you know, it's always taking my mind, like, you know, how do we give them that new experience? How do we give them, you know, that positive? We talk about adverse, so we got to talk, how do we talk about, how do we get them that positive childhood experience, and, you know, help them, you know, help that prevent that behavior that goes on, you know, because, like, you know, we have a 4 more ACEs score, you have a high, super high likelihood of developing a mental health illness if something's not addressed. And so how do we get in there and combat that? So again, you also listening, we're having a great workshop on talking about all these things we've talked about so far at New Covenant Baptist Church on August 3rd. It's gonna be from 9 to 12. If you're looking for how to get there, the information, it is on our social media. You can register on our social media at the State Attorney's Office. I have it posted everywhere on my own personal social media, so you can register and make sure that you are able to attend and learn. So, and talk about some of those stabilized individuals. We talk about teachers as well. You know, people that, you know, okay, daycare people. All of that, all those people, you could be that person in that child's life that can help regulate what's going on, and be that person that child turns to when things are getting, you know, a little crazy, you know, for them.
So I just want to appreciate, you know, your sharing about some of the experience you had in childhood and now this different experience you're having, because that capacity for empathy and understanding is really, you know, important. And having this vision of providing children and families with a vision for what's possible, something different. So yeah. It definitely doesn't mean normalize trauma. Like, we don't want to normalize it. We want to be able to talk about it. So it is, you're right, at the preschool, to be able to talk to people about what's really happening in a home, not keep it secrets, to teachers, to coaches, to pastors, to, you know, to people that can support us and love us as parents. But also what's incredible in the science is there is this term called PTSD, and you've heard of it, right? They coined that with the Vietnam veterans who came back and they had this post-traumatic stress. Well, what they realized in the research is that people who experience, you know, sexual abuse, violence in the home, well, that causes PTSD as well. So children live with PTSD. But what's interesting in the resilience research is this term that is called post-traumatic growth. And so what it means is we can bury trauma deep in us and then just have all of it manifesting throughout our whole lives with our behavior, our addictions, our mental, you know, like could be some negative outcomes if we just bury all this difficulty, hardship. Or we can grow our capacity to talk about it, to bring it into the light. And from that, what many people discover is that, wow, you know, I went through a lot. And look at me. I'm alive. I'm functioning. I'm growing. And I have the capacity, because of my challenges, even to get better and then help other people, right? Through the example of saying, I got through it. You can get through it too. And that's post-traumatic growth. And that happens when we can face the trauma, not bury it, not hide it, not normalize it, grow through it, acknowledge, I had that, I'm getting help. That could be counseling, that could be talking to our pastor, that there's lots of support groups, you know, there's lots of ways to grow through stuff. And then becoming a vehicle of support and mentorship and change for others. That's when people look back and they, you know, in AA, there's a saying, some alcoholics say, I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. And you might wonder, why would an alcoholic be grateful?
I'm alive.
Because they're alive, because they face their addiction, they don't drink anymore, and now they're living a good life, and they're actually helping people. So this is what's possible if we do this work together, learn to admit, be authentic, help one another, and then ultimately get what you're after, which is a safer community. And what we're building is a culture of peace and justice, right? So
we
can do it. Yeah.
I am convinced. I think there is a lot of room in what I do to, you know, kind of just be drawn down. Because I tell her probably like, look, we deal with some evil here in my office, and we deal with some things that, you know, we have to address as that and not call it anything else. And so, you know, how do you not get, you know, bogged down by that? People are like, how do you sleep at night? Cause I'm like, cause I know that there is a path forward for us as a community if we decide to work together to make it happen. And I believe it with every part of my being that we can do it. It's not going to happen immediately. It may not even happen in my lifetime. You know, I may be old, dusty, and buried by the time it happens, but it can happen. We have to go about it in that way. And I just look at it as like, well, it's the end result. Nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to change. We can't do anything about it. You know, and I had this hopelessness mentality. And, you know, we talked about while we were down here in Miami, we talked with Judge Lifeman. And we talked about, you know, this learned helplessness that kind of comes about in our community and kind of how poisonous that is. It's like, we was talking about it, I'm like, this is like a tumor. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like a spreading cancer throughout our community that is just hopelessness. Like, people are just gonna, like, nothing's gonna change. Just, you know, just full of just hopelessness. And I don't live in a world like that. I mean, like, I've seen in my own family, you know, people go from, you know, living on the street almost basically to, you know, being, you know, back into our community and back into our family and back into our society. I've seen, you know, even people in my friend circles like that decide to do something real crazy, like when they were younger and they had to go to prison for a little while. And because they were, you know, they were super dangerous, and then to come back out and, you know, open businesses and be great fathers to their kids and all that kind of stuff like that. So, like, I've seen it happen, you know, I also seen the other side of that too. Like, some people didn't make it, had to bury some friends. You know, one of them that was involved in some stuff that he shouldn't have been involved in, and, you know, end up getting killed. And so, you know, there's different ways that there's so many ways we can just keep pushing to make that happen. And it is one of the things I'm super excited about, especially in the work that we do together, And there's it's just one little small step at a time, we can get there. And so I'm a firm believer in hope. Hope is the key to life almost a lot of times, because without it, but I say, I think about like some of my friends that, you know, I've lost, you know, that committed suicide and things like that, mm-hmm. because somewhere they lost hope. And I'm like, we can't do that. So I want to plug one more group. I'm almost a community partner, guru, and finder of all people. So also one of the people that are going to come in is Grow. Grow is a nonprofit organization. They're going to help us with a little trauma type things for kids. And what they do is provide recreational equipment for kids that, you know, in these low income areas and lower resource areas. So people, places where they don't, may not have a park or a place where, you know, they can, you know, they can do PE or rec. They provide bags of that. So there'll be some basketballs given away, some rec equipment given away at the event on Saturday. And then after our workshop, we're going to have a back to school drive where we're going with our, my great friend, Jermaine Jones, bring out his Safe Tax business and do a back to help partner with my office and do a back to school drive. We're going to do that. And on top of all that, you add to that, because, you know, I always like to do a little extra because this is who I am. I was with a second Harvest Food Bank. We had a tour yesterday of their facilities. We started talking about some how we could help them build out some of their program that they're doing. Would they have a culinary program there for people mm-hmm. to get some culinary skills and get them job placements, and kind of how we can help the one people that are just as involved in that program be successful. They also stepped up and are going to bring food for 150 families on Saturday. So we're going to do the workshop from 9 to 12. The back to school drive is going to kick off about 11 to 4. So we're going to kick off 11 or in around 4 o'clock. We're going to have all those community partners in the building to make sure that we're going to be able to provide the best resources that we can have for our community. So again, that's, you know, that's why I said that's why I know I have hope. I have hope because look, that's almost four organizations. That's private, that's public, that's still nonprofit. Everybody coming together to provide solutions, and so that's really what we're doing. That's really the crux of what we do every day here at the office. So people think it's just prosecutions. No, we just don't do just prosecutions. We build safer communities. And so I'm super excited about that. So there's one more last thing that, so Rachel.
I just wanted to say, I want to just comment on your holistic approach, you know, because that's sort of the approach we have too. We all, when we work together across these different sectors, like what you're doing, mm-hmm. we get in that prevention model, and then we really do achieve our goals when we get out of our silo. And I wanted to give you a little piece of hope that I always hang on to is, you know, because when I was young, and I don't know, I think I'm a little older than you, but I remember that, you know, everybody used to smoke cigarettes. Do you remember that? I mean, in the movies, you know, it was cigarettes. My grandmother drove a Cadillac car, and on the dashboard, she had this little beanbag cigarette thing, and she would be mm-hmm. driving and doing her cigarette, at the hand of the Cadillac. Okay. That has ended. Mm-hmm. We're not smoking like that anymore. And that cessation of smoking happened in about one generation. Mm-hmm. And that's what Nadine Burke-Harris, who really led out this work in California, she's a doctor and MD of Jamaican heritage, beautiful individual, great leader. You know, that's where her hope comes in. Examples like that, like we realized that this was not good for us. And now some people smoke, but not like when we were kids. And so we can, in a generation, educate people to understand ACEs and do this kind of collaborative, multi-sector work so that we lift up children and families and parents and really do go upstream, prevent, and build healthy communities. So I'm excited to work with you, Honorable State Attorney Bain. I really am. I appreciate your approach and what you're doing. And I appreciate the partnership. We all do. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I'm super excited for just everything that we meet about once a month. Everybody knows, so we have a group that meets here locally, that's made up of a little bit of everybody, service providers to PJI, to people like me, to some of our county commissioners and other people in our community. And we kind of brainstorm about ideas about how to make the changes that we need and how we build this resilient community. And so, one of my things, when I met with Judge Lifman down there in Miami, I went back twice because I had a little bit of an emergency to cut our first trip short and kind of finish the trip with him later on, is the idea that we can, really build things by providing simple solutions really to some really complex issues sometimes. And so one of the things that I'm really focused in on, hopefully I can put more of my attention on after November, is I'm really dealing with this mental health situation we have here, building holistic approaches to how we're addressing our mental health, especially people with criminal justice involved, as well as we are going to try to provide better medications, better therapy, all those kind of things for people who are criminal justice involved, as well as deal with the homelessness issues that we have here locally, and trying to get ready for the homelessness bill that we all got from the legislature this year. So we're working hard to try to prepare for that, provide solutions for our community. I think there's going to be some added burden on our justice system if we don't do anything about it. And it's not something that I enjoy doing, especially as a prosecutor, nor as a judge, because I spent all of 2021 at the jail. I was the judge at the jail in all of 2021. I saw all the same people, all the same homeless people, all the same people being arrested for all these different things. And we cannot make a dent in this by criminalizing homelessness. So that is something that we can't do. Same thing, we can't criminalize mental health. And so I am a firm believer in that. It's just something that it can't be done. And the really frustrating thing is that, again, we have some tools that are available to us that can alleviate a lot of the pressure that we have on our systems if we just take the time to, implement it. Again, don't live in this hopeless mindset. Open your mind to all these different things that are going to happen. And so I'm super excited about that. And I'm super excited to have Rachel with us on Saturday. So everybody, again, Peace Justice Institute, I see they're on social media right now. There's somebody who's watching, typing in the information. So how to register for Saturday. So it's going to be on August 3rd, Saturday, 9 to 12. New Covenant Baptist Church, right there on Rio Grande. It's a big old church right next to the lake. We have capacity for around about 100 families. So we're going to try to give the opportunity for these families to make that happen. So check out social media. Go out at this point, show up. If you're a teacher listening, if you're involved anyway with children, if you're a faith leader, come by on Saturday, August 3rd, and you'll receive this information because it's critical to the well-being of our community. And so, Rachel, thank you for coming. If you have any parting words, let us know what you want to hear.
Just want to say thank you. And I, like you, believe in hope and believe in change. And so we're doing it together, making positive change, and all of us, everyone in our community. So show up and be a part of this positive change that's taking place in Central Florida. So thank you for having me today.
All right. Thank you. You have a great one.
You too.
So again, this is one of the things that drives me when I do this job every day. So, and that's kind of my motivational moment here at the end of the show. I wanted to share with you all is one of my things I live by is the greatest purpose in life is the service of others. That is the greatest purpose of having of life Just think about that. Think about, like, if you have kids, right? You spend so much time serving them. And, you know, it fulfills you as a parent. And so it is something that is, you know, pushing us every single day here at the office. It pushes me every single day. So when I get up every day, sometimes, you know, I'm tired because I've been working all day here. I continue to work out in the community in the evening, and sometimes it's late into the evening. And then we have a chance to really come about and talk about. So Jose, if you want to reach out to my office, we'll reach out to you soon. But it's something that is so important about our lives, and so important about what goes on. And so when we work together, when we decide to serve together, it is, you know, critical. We can do so much. I can't really, like, express to you what the possibilities and how endless they are if we decide to go about working together to make things happen, and how just our world can be at that point. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, justice, you know, criminal justice and things like that. Think about a world if we're working together in a common goal of just becoming a safer community, or two, just becoming a resilient community, or in three, just becoming a healthy community. It becoming a healthy community and what we can do to make that happen. And it's about building relationships with people. And it's about our leaders in our community continuing to build that relationship with our community. And so, you know, it's something that drives what we do every single day here at the office. So I want to give a big shout out again to all my community partners that are coming to make Saturday happen. That's Second Harvest Food Bank. Big shout out to them. They are going to be providing meals. Food insecurity is one of those ACEs scores. So we're talking about food insecurity and, you know, the availability for food. That is an ACEs can get you an ACEs score. So that's something we can do something about. We can feed people. I mean, we have food. Like, we can feed people that need food. So that's something we can do as a community. That's something that I think we shouldn't have to be doing as a community. So we can do that. We can do it. And then that's GROW. They're doing something like right now. They're talking about trauma with relates to kids as well. So how do we give kids an outlet to their trauma? Sometimes kids can't, like, one of the biggest things that is frustrating for me that I have to witness a lot is kids can't escape their trauma. They can't escape their families. They can't escape their neighborhoods. They can't escape all these generational and environmental traumas they have. So what tools are we giving them to make that happen? And you know, if you get a chance to talk to my good friends at GROW, you'll tell you that just giving a kid a basketball and just giving them the ability to dribble a basketball and have that physical activity with that child can dramatically reduce the amount of trauma that they have in the community. I want to give a big shout out to New Covenant Baptist Church for allowing us to use their facilities, for allowing us to have a place to pour into our community. I want to give a big shout out to my guy, Jermaine Jones, Safe Tax, for helping us come through and provide the back to school, helping us with the back to school drive and sponsoring a bunch of things that are going on with that. And so we're super excited about the possibilities of all the things to make it happen in our community. And I'm so thankful to have a community that has the people in it that's willing to pour in, that's willing to stand in and do the work. And that is, you know, so important, so vital to what we do as a community and as the success of what I do here at the office. And so, yes, we provide training for my attorneys. They have laws they have to learn and all the things that they have to do to, like, keep our community safe. But it's incumbent upon me as the state attorney for this circuit and for what we do to make sure that we're doing the best for our community. We are putting our best foot forward. We are victim-centered, and we're going after and looking after our victims, especially when it comes to our kids. That we're doing every single thing that we can do to uplift and build a strong community. So until next week, I love you all. I'll see you again on Community Conversations next Wednesday from 2 to 3. And I hope you all have a blessed day.
You've been listening to Community Conversations with State Attorney Bain. Join us again next Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. for another episode.